Maine's Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, committed to supporting Good Shepherd Food Bank by donating another 30,000 meals this month. Learn more at leeauto.com.
This is Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Susan Sharon, filling in this week for Erwin Gratz. And joining me, as they do each week, are Maine Public's chief political correspondent, Steve Missler, and senior political correspondent, Mal Leary. It's the gift-giving time of year, gentlemen, so let's start this week right there by looking at someone who's sitting on a hefty campaign war chest that could be distributed like a few little sparkling ornaments on a Christmas tree. That's Democratic Senate candidate Sarah Gideon. And Steve, you wrote about the $14 million she has left over from her Senate bid in your newsletter this week. What are the rules around that money? How can it be distributed? And what do you know that she's done with it so far?
You know, the federal rules basically prohibit Sarah Gideon from using that money, which is almost $15 million, which is a ton of money, enough to finance several House campaigns if you were so inclined. But the rules prohibit her from using that for personal use, but she could set up a charitable foundation. She could continue to make charitable donations, which she has already, but they're only about 2% of her overall leftover cash. She announced that she was making a couple of donations, a couple $100,000, which, you know, is a good amount of money for a charity, but not when you're, you know, comparing it to what she's sitting on. So she could continue to do that if she would like. She could also stow it away and use it for a potential run down the road if she were so inclined, but we don't have any indication that she's thinking about that. Or she could turn it into a super PAC, or she could make a huge donation to a super PAC herself. And there's a lot of questions about it because it is so much money. I mean, this was a record-shattering campaign. It was also a campaign that up until and on Election Day was asking people for more money. And in one particular email suggested that they would have to end their digital campaign because they might run short of cash. You know, campaigns exaggerate all the time and they feign urgency and desperation all the time. But in this case, it's rubbing people the wrong way in a serious way because of how much money she had at that time and has now. I asked her campaign for a response about, you know, whether it was appropriate to make that kind of a fundraising pitch on Election Day. And the response I received from her campaign spokesperson was essentially that they needed to plan for contingencies. But the reaction that we're getting from the newsletter suggests that that is not a satisfying explanation for a lot of people.
And Mal, this is not like it hasn't happened before. I mean, we had the case of Senator Olympia Snowe with money left over from her campaign. What did she do in that case with the money?
Well, she didn't have anywhere near as much money left over. If I recall, it was around $6 million. But the first thing she did, and let's remember, she retired from the Senate. This was not after a campaign. She was still collecting money as if she was going to run and then decided not to. She sent a lot of the money back to donors. Any donor who wanted their money returned, she sent it to them. And then she used the rest of the money to set up a foundation. She also did use a little bit of the money to support some other Republican candidates.
Well, while we're on the subject of Gideon's campaign, I know both of you have done quite a bit of analysis on what went wrong for Sarah Gideon in that race. But there's recently been more discussion about what the fallout from her loss means for Maine's Democratic Party going forward. And Steve, what are you hearing about that?
There's been a couple of pieces that are sought to basically do a kind of postmortem on what happened and what went wrong for Sarah Gideon. And honestly, you know, the central point that these columns are making is that there was not a competitive primary. There was a primary, but it was very tough for Sarah Gideon's challengers, Betsy Sweet and Bree Kidman, to mount much of a challenge because they were effectively boxed out because Sarah Gideon had been basically anointed by the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee and its allies. And what that meant was that it effectively limited the fundraising abilities of her challengers and created an air of inevitability. And that really rubbed people the wrong way when it happened back in June of 2019. It continues to rub people the wrong way because they believe that had there been a competitive primary, perhaps things would have turned out differently. And, you know, some people have argued that, you know, look at Jared Golden in the 2nd Congressional District. He had a competitive primary and turned out to be a better general election candidate because of it. Now, that may not have worked out in this case. I think you have to evaluate these types of analyses based on the candidates that are there. I mean, in this case, you had Betsy Sweet, who's very far left, and you know that really energized a lot of liberal activists, but she may not have turned out to be a good general election candidate. Republicans that I talked to were itching to run against Betsy Sweet, which is why they were running ads promoting her candidacy back in the summer of 2019. I don't know that the Democratic Party, the national one or the state one, will have much of a reckoning unless you know they can convince some of these power brokers within their party, and that includes some of their donors, to let the process work itself out like Republicans have done so far.
A lot of it has to do with the nature of the main electorate. If you look back over the past, how many times have you seen an incumbent member of the Senate or the House defeated? I don't hear anyone saying anything, because historically it's Peter Kairos back in 1964, after he was caught drunk driving in Washington, D.C. The campaign by Sarah Gideon did not give a good reason, at least in the minds of most Maine people, why they should vote for her instead of keeping the person they do, which of course is Susan Collins. They could convince Maine people that she was the best candidate as opposed to the incumbent Susan Collins. And I think that's the nature of our electorate. I don't think that the campaign by Sarah Gideon took that into account. They thought they could come in, and these are all Washington operatives, and run a cookie cutter campaign where they rely on negative attacks. Well, that doesn't work in Maine.
I guess the argument from the folks that were asking for a competitive primary, that a competitive primary, while it may deplete the financial resources of the presumed frontrunner, it might actually make them, you know, come up with that reason that was missing from Sarah Gideon's campaign, at least in the eyes of voters. If you have a competitive primary, you might have to compete for ideas. That may, it's, you know, lend itself to an idea that you can run on in the general election. And that just didn't happen. Sarah Gideon ran against Susan Collins, Donald Trump, and Mitch McConnell. And that was not enough.
So what are the ramifications for Maine's Democratic Party in terms of those progressive candidates, and how much pressure are they putting on the party to change things up the next time?
I do think that the party leaders are going to be very sensitive to how this leftover cash situation and just, you know, an evaluation of how Sarah Gideon's campaign worked out, because as Mal mentioned, you know, it was really run by DC people and not local people. As to how that plays out, I'm not certain, but I do think that if the Democratic Party leaders don't listen to these complaints and this discomfort with what happened, they kind of run the risk of alienating a lot of their progressive activists. Those people are upset because there wasn't a competitive primary. They're also upset with this donation situation because Democrats have a massive edge in small dollar donations nationwide. Like, that is a huge part of their turnout effort. It gets people engaged. I mean, even in Sarah Gideon's, the day where she was asking for more money, otherwise, you know, she threatened to make her digital campaign go dark. There was donations that range from $1,000 to a guy who gave like 72 cents. Now think about that guy who gave 72 cents. It may be the only, you know, donation he gave the entire campaign. And, you know, you threaten to, you know, upset and alienate those people going forward. And I think the Democratic Party leaders have to be thinking about that, because you could basically torpedo a huge advantage that Democrats have in elections, which are these small dollar campaigns through Act Blue. They've got to be thinking about those consequences going forward.
All right, let's turn now to the state legislature and talk about a special election for a Senate seat that's been left vacant by the departure of Democrat Shenna Bellows of Manchester. She's been elected to serve as the Secretary of State. Steve, who are the candidates looking to replace her in Kennebec County? What can you tell us about them?
Well, the deadline for candidates to apply and run is January 8th. So there's still more time for more candidates to throw their hat in. But at the moment, we have former Democratic State Representative Craig Hickman of Winthrop, and former Republican State Senator Earl McCormick, who's actually held that seat or a different iteration of that seat prior to redistricting 4 times. And then there's another Republican who's thrown his hat into the ring. His name is William Garrett Jr., and he served in the House of Representatives back in the mid-90s. Those are the three candidates that we have right now. Then certainly more could throw their hat in. This is an interesting special election. You know, Shana Bellows won that seat, and it kind of leans Republican. As Mal knows, Mal lives in this area, but she won that seat really through a lot of hard work. And I think that will be the key. If Craig Hickman is the only Democrat who runs, that's going to be his challenge. And he's certainly run tough campaigns in Winthrop, too, which is not a Democratic stronghold.
And knock on some doors, as Shana Bellows did during a pandemic.
That's right. And Earl McCormick, it's a pretty strong victory when he served in the state Senate as a Republican several years ago. He's a formidable candidate that the Republicans can put up if he gets the nomination on the Republican side. And if Hickman's the only Democrat, he will be in for a battle because I think you'll see Earl being able to hold a lot more Republicans than other candidates might.
All right. Well, finally, we can't let this week go by without mentioning the Christmas ask that Senator Angus King is making. And that's a request to the major streaming services to make content available for free over the holidays. Mal, what's this all about?
This is all about Angus King being Angus King, as far as I could see. He is saying that, you know, folks need to keep together and not go out and socialize over the holidays because of the COVID virus. Now, as far as I know, he hasn't heard back from any of the streaming services about whether they'll go along with that gesture.
I suspect that he probably won't for a few reasons. You know, HBO Max, which is one of the streaming services that he's appealed to, recently announced that it was going to partner with Warner Brothers and release a lot of movies that were, you know, destined to open in theaters. They were going to add those same releases to HBO Max, you know, part of your subscription. And directors in particular, like Chris Nolan, who's directed a bunch of really great movies, was super mad about it because a lot of people will look at Hollywood producers and directors and think they're making a ton of money, but there's a huge industry of people who help them make the movies. And those people are having a hard time getting paid because of the pandemic. And it's hard to keep the movie industry running. I don't know if you guys saw it, but Tom Cruise went crazy on the set of Mission Impossible 10 or whatever they're up to right now because there were crew that were breaking COVID rules. He thought that was going to end up, you know, shelving the movie. And his threat was basically, look, you guys are struggling and we're going to have to shut this thing down if you don't follow the rules. That's kind of the behind the scenes thing going on. And the economics, I think, of giving away a month or a couple of weeks, as Senator King is suggesting, may not work out. I mean, it's a nice gesture, and I just don't know that the streaming services are going to go along with it.
All right. Well, Steve Missler, Mal Leary, thank you very much. That's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. I'm Susan Sharon. Erwin Gratz and the team will be back again next week.